Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 67 and a half. This is bonus edition. I like to call this better late than never. John Morgan is here. Fernanda Prachis, our Brazilian correspondent, is with us as well. Still in the United States. We are actually here in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. We're looking at the clock. It's nearing 6 p.m. here in Sioux Falls. And I think it's worth mentioning, honestly, that we deserve probably some type of award or recognition, because
a statue, maybe our own brand of cereal,
that
which is
fair.
My life's dream. Now you guys know.
Prachis Flakes.
I don't know. That sounds a bit ambiguous, though.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, right. We'll come up with something else. All but right. Yeah.
Well, we have not actually been to sleep yet. Is the reason I say that we deserve a little bit of respect? Because
which should also make for a very interesting podcast today.
It should. The frosty beverages are being served as they should be. But after UFC 200. We had a 6 a.m. flight out of Las Vegas, and we had to go through Denver. Now, we did – I fell asleep on the way to Denver. Did you fall asleep?
For like 40 minutes.
Okay, which is not that long of a flight. So we got a little bit of sleep there, and then we changed planes in Denver, flew to Sioux Falls, and I guess initial impressions of Sioux Falls?
It's
without
very,
offending the people of Sioux Falls?
It's very horizontal.
Right, right.
It's we found a very good restaurant.
We did.
We ate good salmon.
I think it was called Grill 26 or something. It was fantastic.
It was really good.
Fantastic.
Perfectly cooked salmon. Cheesecake, which is also always great.
Right.
We did a little shopping, and by we, I mean I did a little shopping.
I followed you around while you
shopped. Yeah, that was not creepy at all.
And I did. In fairness, I did steer out of the way when you were shopping for underwear.
We're spending way too much time together, guys. Yeah, we're like conjoined twins at this point. But that's my impression of Sioux Falls. Very, very white.
It is very white. It is very well. There's just no other way to say it.
Yeah.
I have not seen a brother anywhere since we've been here.
I feel very exotic. I've never felt more Latina.
Yeah. At home in Brazil, you're basically just white.
Yeah. It's I don't know where I belong.
And here you're Latina. Well, so we're getting settled in. We're going to be here for UFC Fight Night 91. We'll start that coverage tomorrow, basically. But we had to get here. It was kind of the flights that were available to us. The one thing I'd noticed about Sioux Falls there's casinos everywhere. Not like real casinos, as far as I can tell, but like every damn gas station you drive by or bar or whatever, it says casino on it.
Are they actually casinos, though?
Why?
Because I thought it could be like a chain of something that's called casino, but it could be casinos.
I think it's casinos.
But
it's probably
tiny
just like video,
ones.
Just like video poker or something like that.
That's depressing, though.
Hey, we live in Vegas.
I mean,
what are you
actual casinos are depressing, but just video poker, that sounds like very sad.
Hey. To each your own. All right, UFC 200 was last night, and that's normally we do post shows and we do them right after. But the bottom line is we just didn't have time between basically finishing up with UFC 200 and getting to the airport. The other thing too is, I'm not gonna lie, oh man, three fights in three nights, exhausted. And I tell you what, I kind of wanted to start there because the UFC has done this a couple times. Now that's the first time that you've been in Las Vegas and gone through this whole experience. They've done it before. And I get it. Like, it's kind of cool to have, like, this, week of festivities where you have all this stuff going on. You have multiple fight cards, which is cool. And I like this, I think, better because some of the way they've done it in the past is to do, like, a big fight on Saturday night, a big pay-per-view with, like, a Conor McGregor fight or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the next day is the tough finale. But, coming back on the Sunday and trying to, like, get excited after you just saw Conor McGregor versus Chad Mendes and Sinead O'Connor and, 10,000 Irish people, and then trying to come back in on Sunday and be like, dude, let's get up for this tough finale. It's kind of hard. So I feel like that's the right thing to do. But
the tough finale was better than the UFC.
It was. Well, we'll get to that. But I just want, like, the week itself, I don't know. Were you a fan of it? Is it too much? Like, because I don't know. I feel like we did so much work that, like, by the time – I'm not going to lie. By the time Miesha Tate and Amanda Nunes were stepping into the cage, I was praying that it was a first-round finish because I'm like, I'm exhausted.
And I'm proof because you actually verbalized that to me.
I did.
You were like, I'm sorry, but I hope it's a first-round finish.
Yeah, I'm ready to go.
Because I'm ready to go. Yeah. That we've talked about this. I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
It was my first time trying this, and I've been – well, you guys have been training me in different positions for the website. And so it was sort of mentally draining. And I just think that you lose a lot of content this way because you have no time for follow-ups. You have no time for – and you had, like, many interesting things going on apart from the fights. Even Misha's, like, struggle to make weight.
Right.
That was dramatic.
It was just kind of glossed over.
We weren't there. Yeah. Mike Bond was there. He covered it for us, and he mentioned that it was a very dramatic moment. And it's the kind of thing that would gain probably some traction,
right.
And it just got lost in the noise.
That's a great point.
And I think it was Thursday when we had the Jon Jones – conference in the morning,
right?
Which obviously that was not planned. It
right.
was, you know, unfortunate that it
edition.
Happened the way. Yeah, so we had just left the Cormier conference
from the
night
before.
Middle of the
night, yep.
Yeah, where what we recorded a podcast, and then the morning after we slept probably like each of us slept like 5-6 hours
at most.
Yeah. I slept a little more because I was staying at the MGM.
Right,
I had
to drive home.
I had to drive home. Then we had the conference, and then we ran to T-Mobile. No, we had the
open workouts, the UFC 200 open workouts at T-Mobile.
Yes, true story.
UFC 202 press conference,
which suffered from audio issues.
Yes,
and then we had the weigh-ins, and then run back to the MGM for fight night.
That's crazy.
That was insane because by the time we were done with the weigh-ins, we were ready to, you know, pack up, write up our stories, go home. And we
Except
still
we have
had
a
like
fight card.
An entire night of fights.
it was a lot. It really was. And so I like the fact that the UFC does this. I like International Fight Week. I like building things like this. But I don't know. I think
I
there's
like
got to be
idea of it. Yeah, there's got to be a way to
maybe split it up. Maybe do like something on Wednesday and something on Saturday. Or
totally agree.
You know what I mean? Like that'd be cool. Maybe like that'd be kind of cool if you did like, you know, a press conference, an open workout, a fight. A press conference, an open workout, a fight. You know, it'd be like 6 days, mm-hmm. 2 events, right back to back. I think that'd be cool rather than everything overlapping.
Yeah, the Fan Expo. Because also another problem, and I think we all ran into it, is just that we had so many fighters who weren't fighting, just available just in Vegas for
right.
the various activities. And we couldn't even get around to talking to them because we just had no time to do it or to even think about it.
Yep.
Because that, to me, is the main thing. Like, we don't really have that much time to come up with interesting angles and things like that. We just kind of like we're trying to scramble just to make the basics happen.
Right.
So personally, I didn't really like it that much.
Right.
I mean, it was a super interesting experience. Again, after going through this, this is like vacation for me.
Yeah, Sioux Falls is going to be easy, easy.
So, and it's interesting, and everybody was there, and it was this huge happening, and we got to meet people from, you know, all over the world. I
right.
got to meet so many Twitter people.
Yeah.
Even some of you listeners.
That's right.
Who came up to us,
that was
came
cool.
up to me. That was pretty cool. So, it was interesting and cool and fun, but at the same time, journalistically speaking, I feel like didn't make, you know, we could have used more time just to
let
content,
it breathe a little
yeah,
bit, yeah,
to do more with the content because we had a lot of content.
We did. Oh, yeah, too much. I mean, even the hardest of hardcore, there's no way they could keep up.
Yeah.
Well, you touched on UFC 200 a little bit. I wonder if part of it is maybe because we were pretty much exhausted by the end of it, but I'm not going to lie. And I don't fault the UFC because, you know, first of all, Jon Jones, they certainly couldn't
yeah.
have known that was going to happen. That was a huge blow. Mm. And on paper, that card did look incredible top to bottom. But I'm not going to lie. I walked out last night thinking UFC 200. It's not going to live in my head as one of the greatest fights. Yeah, I mean, I guess it was cool. But overall, I guess quality top to bottom, I thought 199 in Los Angeles was incredible. 198 in Curitiba. You know, so now we're just talking about the past two pay-per-views.
Yeah.
Out of those three pay-per-views in a row, that was probably number three. I don't know. It feels kind of weird. UFC 200 was this blockbuster, and it really did. I mean, when we were saying things like this is the most stacked card the UFC has ever made, I didn't feel like we were lying. I feel like it was. I mean, there was, you know, when Jim Miller and Takanori Gomi are fighting in fight number one.
The prelims were actually, if you look at the
yeah.
– and Johnny Hendricks and Gaslam, and then Joe Lauzon and Diego Sanchez – I think we were expecting it to go on for
right.
a little longer than it did. But when you look at it, you had these huge matchups. And you had Giger and Musasi, who always does like
yeah.
these amazing fights. So you had I don't think we were wrong by assessing that, but at the same time, when you stop to look at the main card coldly, like, what was Brock Lesnar going to do with Hunt?
Right.
Exactly what he did. Cormier with Jon Jones would have been an entirely different story.
Totally.
With Anderson, what was Cormier to do with Anderson? And
exactly.
Then he did. And Nunes finished fast, which is what...
Thank God.
Yeah, everything that we can ask of her, of, you know,
right.
main eventer to do. So that was it. And to me, the best fight in the main card was clearly Aldo and Edgar.
Sure.
You know? But, yeah, I guess... In terms of star power, you can't deny the strength of a card that had Jon Jones and Brock Lesnar. They were alone the biggest driving powers behind it. And then obviously Aldo and Edgar in terms of athleticism and just, you know, basically for the hardcores and for people who know a little bit more about the sport, I wouldn't mind
that was
watching
my main
that
event.
Fight forever.
Aldo and Edgar was my main event.
For
one
me,
night.
For
I
sure.
mean, Jones-Cormier would have been.
Yeah.
And then when we lost Jones-Cormier, Aldo Edgar became...
Yeah.
My main event.
Of course, because it was clearly like the most evenly matched up, the most interesting one. And I love the fight. I would watch them fight forever.
It was awesome. Well, you know, and I think a good measurement was, you know, we track the athlete outfitting pay, the Reebok pay, if you want to call it that. But it's the athlete outfitting policy pay. $350,000 is the most ever paid out on a single night. It's kind of a weird way to track. I mean, star power or how much a card is loaded. But, of course, that's all paid out by tenure or championship status. So when it's the most ever paid out, it shows you you've got the most experience on a card, the most veterans on a card. So it was loaded.
You had the championship fights that pay out a little more.
Yeah.
Because then we had Sanchez and Lauzon, total veterans.
They both get the max.
Yeah, yeah. You had Jim Miller, who gets close to the max. You had Cormier making
champion money.
Even though. You had Aldo and Edgar making
challenger money. Yep.
You had Misha making championship money, and you had Amanda making challenger money. So these things add up. You had very little. You didn't have many newcomers. I think.
Right.
Thiago was a newcomer. The tough, obviously. Juliana Pena doesn't have that many UFC fights. Kat Zingano doesn't have that many UFC fights.
I mean, Northcutt
as well.
Doesn't have that many. Enrique Marin definitely hasn't many.
Yeah.
But it was a fun – well, I mean, it looked good on paper. It just honestly, in my mind, it just didn't end up being that entertaining.
Yeah.
The main event, we both picked Misha Tate going into that fight. You and I were talking –
but we both said the same thing.
Well, you know what? You're right. And we were talking on the flight over here. And in retrospect, you know, I mean, our staff picks are our staff picks. None of us pretend to be
I mean, listen,
I watched – thousands and thousands of fights. I am not going to sit here and pretend like I'm the best at predicting fights, because I think you and I both are a little bit different maybe than some people. Like, we kind of like watching the fights for the stories and the athletes and the people. Like, I'm not going to – I mean, I think I have an idea. I mean, you know, I usually pick around 65% or something like that,
if
about
it
two-thirds.
If it was easy, though, people would be rich.
True. Yeah, we'd be gambling. But I say that because we both – you're right. Going into it, we both said, listen, Amanda could really get this done early.
Yeah.
But
going
she
back,
always
yeah.
gasses. This is a 5-round fight. But in retrospect.
And we haven't seen her look that strong, though.
Oh, she did look good.
I mean, we've seen her look like she could do damage, but I don't think neither of us knew that she could do that much
damage. That was the best
damage.
She's ever looked. That was the best she's ever looked.
She peaked like Holly with Ronda.
Right.
Like, they picked the right time. They had their best performance during their championship fight. So we couldn't predict that, but we had the same mindset. And even before – you were at the press room while I was in the media room.
Right.
And we were talking, and most people had Tate.
Right.
But the same conversation ensued. I have my money on Amanda because I think she'll take it in the first round. That's the way that she can take the fight.
Right.
And some of us were thinking, well, Tate's going to weather the storm.
Right.
And take it either via decision or just a late submission or whatever. I didn't think she would submit Amanda. Honestly,
right.
I thought she would take a decision.
I did too. But, you know, it was funny because once the fight started, I mean, immediately, I don't know if Misha looked uncomfortable or just didn't have a rhythm right, but I thought she looked kind of helpless in there from the very start. Like, it was like, this is not going to go well.
She was – every punch was landing right in the middle of her face. And – to me, that's weird because that's – you take the first one. You don't want to keep your broken nose exposed to more punches.
Yeah.
And all of them were just going – they were landing clean. I think it was Mike Bond who mentioned, and I didn't see that. She actually tripped over the mat at some point.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, I didn't see it. It was – so I'm not – Mike mentioned something like that.
I didn't remember her stumbling,
conference.
But I didn't notice that it was a trip.
I don't know if that contributed to anything, but it was clear by the end. And honestly, when she was kind of like in her back and you saw the blood dripping from her nose,
right.
I commented, I think we might have a submission via punches, which right. is rare. But can you blame a person?
It's basically what happened. I mean, that choke, it didn't even,
it
wasn't even
a
choke.
It
I don't even think it was like a neck crank. It was just like, I'm just done.
And Misha, she grapples a lot. She's not, you know, she's not an inexperienced grappler. She wouldn't panic like that for like, you know. So I also agree that it was mostly the shock. She looked like she just wanted to get out of there. And who can blame her? Her nose looked awful. We didn't see it at the press conference because she was holding a towel over her nose. But I can only imagine. She sounded nasally.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'll be honest. I was in the back. You know, our Cole Coffey was busy working, so he didn't get to shoot video. I was actually shooting video for us in the press conference at UFC 200. So I was on the riser shooting video. And I'm not going to lie. I was really considering, like, texting. Because Misha was just sitting there. Nobody was asking her questions. She's holding – you know, ice on her, a towel and ice, I'm assuming something there over her nose. And to be honest, I didn't think they needed to bring her to the press conference. When somebody's in that shape,
I wouldn't bring
you used to work PR. I mean, I don't know how the discussion goes. I don't know if somebody feels like they're supposed to because they're going to get in trouble if they don't.
Oh, yeah, I didn't. I got orders. And sometimes I would actually voice my concerns.
Right.
But, you know, ultimately they ask the fighter. They don't make the fighter go.
So Misha had the right, she can say.
I think she, I don't know if it's something like, I don't want to be Ronda, I don't want to look like a sore loser, which she didn't because she also spoke
right
in the octagon.
She did.
Right, and she was super classy. And again, I don't think Ronda was wrong in any way. People react in different ways. What happened to Ronda must have been so emotionally devastating that she has every right to storm out, to do whatever she wants to do. It's probably a very difficult moment that we never understand.
Sure.
But I think Misha maybe wanted to take the high road, wanted to be classy, wanted to address the fans. And, I mean, it really worked for her. I think Misha is clearly a fan favorite, and she has every reason to be a fan favorite. She carries herself very gracefully. And I think probably that was her mindset. I'm thinking nobody made her go.
Right.
She chose to go for a reason. And whatever it was, I think it was really cool of her to go and just give all the props to Amanda. You know, she said, this is not my night. This is her night. And I would love for her to give me a rematch if she's so inclined and stuff. So I think she did, honestly, the best thing for her career.
Yeah.
You know?
It was gutsy of her to come do that, and I can appreciate it. It was hard to watch. I mean,
it was.
You know, it's one thing to hold like the towel there, but then to start talking and not want to let it go. So I'm guessing either blood was still coming out or whatever, and she basically held the microphone up over the towel. That was hard to watch.
And would you want to see images of yourself like that over and over?
No, that's crazy. Okay, Amanda Nunes, Brazilian.
Beast,
no doubt about it. The only full Brazilian UFC champion right now. Of course, Aldo does have the interim. But I got to ask. I mean, I feel like she's anonymous almost in the United States. She does live in Florida.
Yeah.
You know, she trains in the American Top Team. Yeah. And I think she's been down there for a while. Her English is steadily getting better. It's not great. I'm not going to fault her for that. I speak zero Portuguese. so she's definitely trying. But does she have any star level at all? Is there any awareness at all in Brazil?
Amanda has a few things. Well, she was the first Brazilian girl signed by the UFC. Mm. And she was the first. She wasn't the first to fight.
Right.
But she was the first to win. I think the first to fight, and I have to check, was Jessica Batistaca.
Right. I think you're right.
Jessica Andrade. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. But Amanda was the first to fight, to be hired, and the first to win. So she had that. And I remember at the time I was doing PR, and it was a story that we could pitch. Mm-hmm. But she had been living in Florida. She moved right after her, something like that. So she didn't do much media. She's not that well-known in Brazil.
Right.
She's like barely known in Brazil at this point. And in the U.S., her English is not that great yet. And she just doesn't – I would assume she's not that well-known here either.
Right. Definitely
so,
not.
Yeah, so I think Amanda's sort of like a question mark for many people. But she has some amazing storylines. She's the first openly gay champion in the UFC, which is amazing.
That's cool. Yeah. It's really cool.
You had Elise Carmouche as probably the first one to come out ever, right? And she challenged, obviously. Not challenged. Was Ronda? Ronda was the state of champion, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
She was challenging Ronda. Because Ronda brought her belt. I don't remember.
No, that's right. They gave her the belt, but she didn't want to touch it or accept it until she won in the octagon. If I remember
something
that.
Like
I remember that, right? Because I remember, like, they gave it to Aldo.
Yeah.
And I believe they gave it to her, if I remember right. But I remember her saying, like, she didn't want to touch it. No, maybe they had to fight for it. I think they had to fight for it.
You think so?
I don't know.
Anyway, something like
sleep
that.
Sleep would help.
But she didn't. Yeah. Sleep would be awesome.
Yeah.
But anyway, Amanda was the first one to win. And that's really great. And, you know, I think she's from this small town in Bahia. She used to play soccer. She was a bit of, apparently she was a very, like, energetic kid.
Right.
And her mom, like, signed her up for, like, classes and stuff and tried to, like, get her to do as much physical activity as possible to, like, kind of let off steam. So she played soccer for a while. It seemed like she was well on her way. And our Brazilian friends from Combate wrote a very cool story on her, talking a little bit about that. But it's very cool. And she started off doing jiu-jitsu at 16, apparently, and kind of, like, evolved from there. But she had the same Aldo storyline, slept on the mat, you know, didn't have money to do anything.
Wow.
Just trained, slept there, woke up, cleaned the mat. Like, she has that super, like, intense jiu-jitsu-oriented mentality. But jiu-jitsu wasn't giving her money. So that's how she migrated to MMA. And she actually debuted with a loss. Chris Cyborg also had her first.
That's right.
Yeah, also lost her first one. So, and things evolved from there. So she has an interesting story. She came from the bottom. She worked her way up. And I'm actually looking forward to, you know, telling that story a little bit
more. Yeah, now that she's a champ, I'm interested in learning more about her. I'm not going to lie. I didn't know a lot about her either. But when she's on, man, her power is amazing. And just to clarify, I did look at it. Ronda was given the UFC title, but I remember clearly.
I remember the conference. They given it to her.
And that's what I remember. And I remember her clearly, like, she was, because I was standing, she didn't want to wear it.
Yeah.
She was like, I don't want to touch it. She wanted to win it. That's why it was kind of in my head.
Yeah.
All right. Openly gay fighter. I think that is awesome. An openly gay UFC champion. It's funny because earlier in the week, there was the first press conference of the week. Travis Brown was wearing
We Are All Fighters.
And you were sitting next to me at the press. I was like, look at that shirt. That's awesome. Later, we come to find out, you know, it was a kind of a big movement. It was actually it was raising money for, an awareness center, an outreach center there in Las Vegas. I think it's a cool, shirt. So I actually might get one myself. I just liked it, and I thought it was cool to have that. I think it's nice that we can talk about it. It's kind of weird because nobody really made a big deal about it going into it. So maybe that's a good sign that society's progressing or something, that they don't care that it's an openly gay champion. Or maybe the mainstream media just honestly didn't know that she was openly gay and maybe they'll latch onto it more. But I think it's cool. I mean, listen, I'm heterosexual, but I just don't understand how people can – I mean, this is 2016, dude. Whatever nation you're from, whatever belief you have, whatever sex you are, like – how can you infringe on what anybody else wants to do?
I don't know, but people do it.
Right.
So that's why it's important. And honestly, I think for fighters, it's an especially important cause because there is the stigma of this machismo culture that, I mean, I think a lot of people think fighters are homophobes. I think there's that culture, you know, that is a very misogynistic field of work or whatever, and I think that's a very good cause for them to support, and I think it's very brave, actually.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure you're gonna have many UFC fans who are gonna be enraged by this because people are awful. And they are. They're just the worst.
What about in Brazil? Will that impact her star? What's the feelings on homosexuality in Brazil? Like, will that impact her ability to be a star there?
I can't speak in behalf of the entire country, but...
No, you are the representative of Brazil. You speak.
Yeah, I've heard that on Twitter, actually. It's a very, very heavy...
It's a responsibility. It's a responsibility, but...
But no pressure.
No pressure at all.
You're just representing a very big
nation. Does Brazil support or...
It's different, though. I mean, I feel like you guys are more... I don't know if I want to use the word developed, but you have more of an intense aversion to homophobia than we do. For instance,
in areas, it's regionalized.
Yeah,
I think. It's,
of course.
It's
yeah, with you guys, that's really much the difference. So in Brazil, like a lot of our joke, our sense of humor, it's based on like making fun of people for being gay. And you've had like amazing fighters who I absolutely adore, like Big Nog, making somewhat homophobic remarks.
Right.
When he said a while back that he's okay with people being gay but wouldn't want to roll with them.
Right.
Which is, I think that's a mentality that he and a lot of people wouldn't realize that's a homophobic remark.
But
because
it is.
People think that being a homophobe means being actively angry or mean or
like attacking them.
Or
physically
attacking
them or something.
They don't know that denying their existence or in a very basic level is homophobia.
Right.
In any case, case in point today. Let's just switch the subject a little bit. If you'll allow me, I'm taking over this podcast. with Cerrone, who made
one of my favorite fighters, no question about it. Love watching him fight.
Of course, but he did use a slur.
Yes, he did.
The same slur that was it Michael Bisping he used?
Yep.
And the backlash. And the fact that people reported on it, that people were angry, that they had to issue apologies.
Right.
That, to me, is a really cool sign of progress. Because a lot of people say, oh, they're only apologizing because they had to. They're only whatever the reason. It means that people are aware that it's frowned upon. And to me, that's the first step towards understanding that if some people are offended by it, it's offensive. So in that sense, I think you guys are a lot more aware and a lot more sensitive to those things than we are. If we are more or less homophobic, I wouldn't be able to tell. It's just different manifestations of the same thing.
Okay, UFC 200 co-main event, Brock Lesnar versus Mark Hunt. Another one. You picked Hunt, right?
I picked Hunt.
So we both went 0-2 on the main and co-main. Okay, another one that I don't know if in retrospect – I was the dummy for not giving Brock enough credit because I remember his run. I remember how athletic he was. I remember how fast he was. But I also was a little shocked by Mark Hunt. We were in the press room afterwards, late at night after the press conference, and I kind of made the joke. I'm like, do you think maybe Mark Hunt thought it was a 5-round fight? I mean, it just like I don't understand. Like, when was he going to start fighting? And I don't mean that as an insult. I mean, I can't imagine what it's like even when you hit as hard as Mark Hunt to have to stand in front of a dude as big as Brock Lesnar knowing that he's going to try to take you down. But I don't know, in looking back at this fight and knowing that I picked it wrong, if I screwed up because I didn't give Brock Lesnar enough credit or if I screwed up because I thought Mark Hunt was going to do something different.
I think we just didn't know what we're going to get with Brock. The dude's been away for so long, though. Like, how can we prepare for what we're going to see? And again, I think our dumbness comes from basically not thinking that it was also last minute for Hunt.
Right.
And he's not a cardio fucking king.
True.
Oh, sorry, I swore. First one.
Twitter's coming out.
Drinking game.
Twitter's
how many times
out.
Are you innocent? Anyway, so I think we just didn't really realize, I didn't, that it was a last minute fight for Hunt too.
Yeah.
I just, and again, we all have a like thing in our heads that Brock just doesn't like to get hit in the face.
Right.
And Mark Hunt is very good at hitting people in the face.
Right.
And I think we both saw the fight going the same way. Hunt landing it in the first round and just
Hunt hitting Brock in the face.
In the face and him falling down in the first round. In the media room, I think it was Luke Thomas who asked me, he was like, who do you have for this fight?
Right.
I said, Hunt. And he said, well, I have Brock. I think Brock is awesome, whatever. And I said, well, Brock was awesome. Brock learned very fast. Brock is a very athletic guy. Brock looks in great shape. But I just don't feel confident betting on a person who I don't know anymore.
Right.
It's
question marks. Just pure question marks.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't know.
So whoever, I think the reasoning behind that pick was whether you're willing to go with the unknown and just kind of like trust that the guy's going to come back the same way that he did. Or, like us, question that a guy who's been away from the sport for so long and who doesn't really remember what it's like getting hit in the face with such force is going to react.
Yeah. I got to give Brock a lot of credit, man. It is. And I'll say this. I've said it before, and I still feel this way. When Brock first came to the UFC, I was like, I hate this. I hate the fact that there's a pro wrestler in MMA, competing for the heavyweight title. And then he won, and we saw the eyeballs and the star power. And then when he left, I did kind of miss him because, I mean, the guy commands a lot of attention. So I kind of wonder, I don't know what I want to see next because everybody's talking about what comes next. You know, he said coming in it was going to be a one-off. Now I guess he's got – and I know absolutely nothing about pro wrestling. I'm not gonna lie. But I believe he has a pro wrestling match appearance next month in August. I don't know. Do you want to see him keep fighting? I mean, was it just, hey, this was UFC 200. Let's get this crazy idea of bringing Brock Lesnar back. And now let's let him go off in the sunset. Because I think he said he's 38 or 39 years old. 39. So do you want to see more Brock Lesnar fights? Or was that just like, you know, kind of like the gold canvas? It was just one night only, and I don't ever want to see that again.
How exciting was he?
The fight wasn't that great.
So, you know.
The buildup was great.
Yeah, but. Again, I think the heavyweight division is very thin. I think he showed that he does belong there. He did beat a top eight. It's top eight, right?
Yeah.
He did beat a top eight fighter. He's in great shape, and he's a beast. He's very explosive. He's very fast. I don't even know how much a cow guy that big can just, you know, move that much mass so quickly. It's very interesting and peculiar, and just shows that he's extraordinary. And I remember when I first started watching, actually the first event that I bought was UFC 100. Mm-hmm. And then I went back and I saw like when he lost and how big of a dummy he was when he lost,
right,
when he was submitted, and then how much he evolved. And I was like, this guy is a beast.
Right.
He can learn so fast because he went from zero to 100 real quick.
Oh, I was going to throw that in there if you didn't. Damn it.
So I'm spending way too much time in the U.S. I need to get back to Brazil.
Do you even speak?